Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Democrats are saying this morning that they have an agreement with President Trump on DACA and border security. President Trump is tweeting that they don't. And now you know why the politics are so complicated. Think about this. In the time that presidents and politicians have tried to pass legislation to protect dreamers from being deported, some of those dreamers have moved from kindergarten all the way up to high school. For 16 years, efforts to address the status of children of undocumented parents legislatively has failed. And now President Trump is saying he wants Congress to solve it in 6 months. Our conversation today, how politics and public opinion have shifted and why that still may not be enough to get something done. And as our guests join us, I want to hear from you on this. Has your opinion on how to handle the Dreamers changed over the last decade or so? And do you think Congress should address the Dreamers immediately and individually, or should it wait for comprehensive immigration reform? So I want to know if your opinion has changed on this issue, whether you think Congress ought to get to it individually and quickly, or whether this should wait for some kind of comprehensive immigration reform. Here's how to get in on the conversation. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter at Kerry, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Our guest today, Tom Wong, is Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of California, San Diego. Hey, Tom, good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Priscilla Alvarez is Assistant Editor at The Atlantic, and she's with us today from Washington. And Priscilla, welcome to you. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Tom, do you think this back and forth between Schumer and Pelosi and Trump today is really more about the president being careful of his base, even though it appears that his instinct is to try to get something done on immigration reform? How do you interpret it?
I've stopped trying to read too much into the president's tweets, but meeting with Pelosi and Schumer, I think, is a bit more substantive than just a tweet. I don't think that DACA and the DREAM Act more generally is actually something that appeals to the president's base. This is something that is going to rile up that base and some conservatives in the House as well.
And Priscilla, do you agree with that, that the base? Now, I see Representative Steve King from Iowa, but he's really far over on the conservative side of the spectrum, and he's saying this is really going to be upsetting to the base. Can the president make a case to his most conservative base that looks like it might be acceptable?
So I've spent a lot of my morning talking to immigration restrictionists to kind of get a sense of how they're thinking through this. Mm-hmm. And something that I've heard over and over again is that the deal that they want struck is one that comes with legislation to reduce legal immigration. And so there are measures out there that are like this, like the RAISE Act. And so that's what they want to see. What concerns them is that they would trade DACA protections for border security, which they sort of see as the low-hanging fruit in this debate. So I think that there is a way for him to reconcile DACA protections and also appeal to his base. But I haven't heard any mention so far from the administration to move in a direction where they would push for this type of legislation.
So just to understand what you're hearing this morning on some of the reporting, that there could be measures that potentially Democrats would sign on to, too, that would limit legal immigration and would add something to the security at the borders, and then it would include something for the Dreamers. Tell me how it sounds.
Sure. So that's the obstacle, right? Because the measures to reduce legal immigration, first of all, don't have that much support among Republicans. And also, there are no Democrats, to my mind, that would sign on to this type of legislation. So that's where it gets challenging, because even if the White House is pushing for DACA protections and wants to negotiate some sort of deal, and Congress is doing the same, what some of his base is looking for seems really difficult to come through. And the border security, which is vague in and of itself, is a more promising bargaining chip,
per se. Got it. Tom, how do you read that?
I have a similar take. So the concern among immigration advocates is that DACA and the DREAM Act more generally would be used as a bargaining chip for cuts to legal immigration, like through the RAISE Act, or to fund Trump's border wall. And so if we are hearing out of the White House and from Trump himself that the border wall isn't going to be part of this round of conversations about immigration reform, then the concern shifts to the RAISE Act. But as was previously mentioned, the RAISE Act has very little support, not just from Democrats, but also from Republicans. So it's hard to see how the RAISE Act could, in Congress, get the 8 votes from Democrats needed to overcome a filibuster, plus to overcome the skepticism that a lot of Republican senators already have about the RAISE Act.
Priscilla, I want to be clear here about the situation that the Dreamers are in right now. If they've enrolled in President Obama's DACA program, they have secure status at the moment, and they have permits to work, right? What else?
Right. So the way that it works is that they are protected from deportation and they are allowed to work legally in the country and they receive work permits and they can renew this for every 2 years. Right. So it's a 2-year renewal program. Importantly, DACA is not a status. This does not provide them legal status, which is why ending this program leaves them in limbo, because many that don't fall under the new DHS timeline would be eligible for deportation as soon as those work permits are expired.
What's your sense about how many people who were eligible for DACA actually signed up for it? I guess I'm trying to get a sense of how many people are still not coming forward and waiting to see how this is going to turn out.
So the Pew Research Center did a study on this a while back, and they found that there are about 1.8 million undocumented immigrants that would be eligible for the DACA program. And right now, you know, nearly 800,000 have benefited from it.
Okay.
So the majority, yeah.
Well, no, but you said 1.8 million who are eligible.
Right. What I meant to say is that the majority of those eligible have applied to the program. So 800,000 have received benefits of the 1.8 million that could be eligible.
Tom, they're not considered citizens, but if there was some kind at the moment, but if there was some kind of negotiated agreement, could we presume that there would be an accelerated application process that they could follow? Or what do you think might happen with this?
Yeah, it's hard to read the tea leaves, but just a quick clarification. There are about 1.8 million who are potentially eligible for DACA.
Uh-huh.
Out of that, 1.3 million were immediately eligible. So because of the requirements for DACA, some people actually are aging into the program.
Uh-huh.
So, and then there are other people who are eligible but for the education requirement. So out of those immediately eligible, we're talking about roughly 1.3 million. And so 800,000 out of that 1.3 million gives you that majority of people who are immediately eligible who have applied.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so a lot of the conversations right now are about providing protections for DACA recipients and for undocumented young people more generally through something like the DREAM Act, which would give them legal status and put them on a path to citizenship. And so this would definitely reduce the sort of cloud of uncertainty that DACA recipients are currently living under.
And do you feel like, Priscilla, that the process for whatever might come out of a legislative deal is something that holds back, you know, some of these people who were eligible and haven't applied are feeling pretty uncertain about what their status may be, and that's why they don't want to reveal themselves?
Well, remember, the DREAM Act was first introduced in 2001. So there have been iterations of it since then, and they have fallen short of passage each time. So mm-hmm. some of the DACA recipients that I've talked to are hesitant to be too hopeful about where this new attempt at legislating will end, and whether they will be able to proceed with the lives that they lead, you know, after the 6-month delay comes up.
If you're listening to the conversation this hour, we're talking about some of the news that happened overnight on this deferred action situation for the children of undocumented people in the United States brought here by their parents. And the status of that has been, as noted at the beginning of the conversation here, very complicated politically, has kind of been in limbo for more than a decade. And now President Trump apparently had a conversation with Democratic leaders last night. Those leaders put out a statement saying they can sort of see a framework about where these negotiations go on DACA and border security, Trump not being quite so specific about what was discussed. And so we've asked Priscilla Alvarez from The Atlantic and Tom Wong from the University of California, San Diego, to talk to us about where we're at today and what this may mean. And then I'd like to hear from you, because public opinion has been changing on this. I will talk to Tom and Priscilla about that in a second. But I want to know if your opinion on how to handle the Dreamers has changed. I mean, even no matter where you stand on the idea of immigration, do you look at the Dreamer situation and say, yes, I think they deserve a different kind of treatment, or I'd like to see Congress address this quickly? Or are you not sympathetic to that cause, as many of people who have supported President Trump are not? I'd love to have you weigh in here. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Tom, I want you to listen to some of the contradictions in the president's statements about DACA. And I think you can hear some of the ambivalence about this. It seems pretty widespread through the Republican Party. So here is the president in February before he announced that he was going to end DACA.
We're going to show great heart. DACA is a very, very difficult subject for me, I will tell you. To me, it's one of the most difficult subjects I have, because you have these incredible kids, in many cases. In some of the cases, they're having DACA and they're gang members and they're drug dealers, too. But you have some absolutely incredible kids, I would say mostly. They were brought here in such a way. It's a very, very tough subject. We are going to deal with DACA with heart.
So what do you hear in that? You really hear him thinking out loud about this, Tom. What's the subtext of that to you?
Well, when we talk about undocumented young people and DACA recipients more specifically, we're talking about a group that was brought to the United States as children. Just to lay out very quickly some of the DACA requirements, we're talking about coming to the U.S. before their 16th birthday. They have to have lived continuously in the U.S. since June 15th, 2007. And they had to be under the age of 31 when DACA was first announced in 2012. In addition, we're talking about an education requirement. If people don't meet the education requirement, they can actually serve in the military and get DACA. And, of course, they have to have a clean criminal record. And so when we think about this group in particular, what my research shows is that the average age of entry for this group is 6.5 years old. And so we're talking about kindergartners and first graders coming to the country, growing up in this country. It's the only country that they've ever known, spending most of their formative years in the United States, essentially having an opportunity through DACA to, you know, have temporary relief from deportation, to have that work authorization, move into their mid-20s and early 30s, and just begin to hit their stride in life. We're talking about hitting their stride in their careers, moving on to college, to their first jobs. We're talking about growing families in terms of U.S. citizen children, as well as buying their first homes. And just as they're beginning to hit their stride in life, we're having this debate that led to rescinding DACA, which literally is pulling the rug out from underneath these young people. And now all of this additional sort of uncertainty in terms of mixed signals about they're going to be okay, there's legislation on deck. But the status quo right now is that DACA is rescinded.
And, of course, when the president talks about it like that, that leads to a lot of the confusion that I think you've just said, Tom, that if you're involved in this, that people are experiencing.
Yes, absolutely. And part of this is that the data are clear in terms of how DACA has positively affected the lives of not just individual recipients, but their families, and there's an argument to be made that it's positively affected the economy more generally. And so despite the, you know, we are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws, sentiment from those within the president's base, this is, if there were to be an exception, or if there were to be a case where, you know, laws are on the books, but bad laws can be on the books and we need to change them, then this may be it. And imagine trying to plan one's life. Imagine trying to sort of move up in one's career when one doesn't even know if they're going to have these protections after March 5th, 2018.
Tom, I know we have to let you go. This is probably a good moment to do that. I really appreciate the insight and the time. Thanks much.
Thank you.
Tom Wong with us, an assistant professor of political science at the University of California, San Diego, and Priscilla Alvarez with us from The Atlantic. And to the calls here to Greg, listening in Hinckley. Hey, Greg, how are you thinking about this?
Well, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a little frustrated and I guess not terribly sympathetic with the DACA issue because I travel a fair bit and spend a lot of time in France and Italy and other places in Europe. And all those countries have pretty stringent immigration rules. And if I landed in France as a kid, I wouldn't be given citizenship rights or anything like that without going through their immigration rules and procedures. So I guess I'm a little confused as to why we feel so much sympathy towards DACA students or kids, given that every other country or developed country I'm aware of has pretty stringent immigration rules.
So, Greg, it's a good point. And Priscilla, when you hear the language from the president there and from a number of members of Congress, you hear them saying things like, through no fault of their own, they were brought here. That ends up being a pretty key component to the politics of this, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. And I think another requirement that I think should be noted in this is that they also cannot have a criminal record, and they have to have either attended school, received a certificate, received a degree, or be attending school. So there are a lot of components of this that make them a model group. And that's something that can also frustrate immigration advocates because it's by accident make the undocumented population seem, not as not as willing to get legal status. I think the really complicated thing here is that the DACA recipients can't receive legal status without a legislative solution.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few reasons for that. In order to apply for legal status, you need to have a qualifying petitioner. So that can be a family member that is a citizen, or it can be an employer. But even so, even if you have that, these recipients came into the country illegally, so therefore they cannot apply at all. There are a few exceptions, but generally speaking, this group will be undocumented if there is no legislative solution. And so I think that onus sort of falls on Congress.
I think that's a really important point, too, that I want to be clear, because then you hear people say, well, go to the back of the line. You know, there's plenty of people who have been waiting for a long time to get into the country because of their status. They need some kind of legislative fix to be able to do that. Is that a way to put it?
Yes, that is right. And it's something that I've talked to lawyers about who have been receiving these questions, and they've even been receiving them from employers. So employers who have hired DACA recipients who, again, can legally work in the country with their work permits, who typically were able to continue renewing unless something changed in their profile, say if they, there was a charge on their record. And now they, too, are having to ask, well, what happens when these renewals come to an end? They won't be able to legally work in the country, and how do we make sure that our systems are working properly to catch who may be undocumented soon? So there's a lot of questions floating around, and that's why there's a lot of pressure on Congress to find a legislative solution.
Sarah called from Eden Prairie, and maybe this applies to what you've just said. She said, we just sent out a DACA card to someone. We used a form letter from immigration, and it said you couldn't renew it in 2 years. People are being told they can't renew. Do you know why that is?
So I want to be clear about what Department of Homeland Security said last week when it did reassign this program. So anybody that has a work permit expiring before March 5th of 2018 can renew. They can only renew by October 5th, so they can apply for that renewal. That means that we will still have, assuming that these renewals go through, we will still have some DACA recipients going into 2020. But the vast majority of the DACA recipients may fall after the March deadline. So that means that we will have people start to lose their DACA next year. So that is perhaps why, you know, you have people that already realize and people that I've talked to that in May and November, they lose their DACA and they have to rethink, can I continue to work where I work? And if not, what other options do I have?
Yeah, I'm hearing from on Twitter a number of people who are talking about, well, these dreamers are people who are getting educated and who will fill the American workforce, and we need that. Holly says DACA affects not only students but also teachers. Estimated 20,000 teachers have DACA work permits. Boy, I didn't know that. And a call here from Deborah in Minneapolis. And Deborah, it sounds like you're thinking about the workforce element of this too.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
I'm a retired registered nurse, and we have a shortage of over a million registered nurses and also doctors, and we're importing doctors and nurses from other countries. So that's the practical piece of it. And the personal piece is I have breast cancer, and I know a dreamer who is majoring in molecular biology.
And you're saying this is somebody who might go into a field of research that would end up being important to you and others?
Well, right. And just, you know, why are we importing nurses from the Philippines when we have people here?
So, Priscilla, the workforce element of this, what would you say?
So a lot of the DACA recipients, based on some studies that I've seen, are in their 20s. And so a lot of them then are in the workforce. And this is important because they are, you know, they're contributing to the American economy. And they are also working in hospitals, working as teachers, et cetera. And so, again, this sort of six-month delay and this ending puts a lot in question about whether they can continue to work where they're working, to study where they're studying. I spoke to one DACA recipient who wants to study to be a lawyer, and he is not sure whether he can continue that path when his DACA expires next year. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, the legal income is really important, not only to contribute to studies and to fund tuition, but also a lot of these recipients financially sustain their families, some of whom are undocumented. And so that is an important component of this, too. And then second, because if he were to get a lawyer degree, he couldn't necessarily practice unless he had some sort of work permit. Yes, there are some DACA recipients who are pursuing these sort of fields and are very passionate about them, but it's not clear whether they can pursue those moving forward, depending on where Congress lands.
Do you think as the politics of this really heat up, if indeed it looks like there is a framework for further negotiations between the president and the Democrats, that we will again hear, as we have in many, many other debates around comprehensive immigration reform, that nobody should get amnesty, not the dreamers, not the people who are already here. I mean, and that seems to be a word that's a, you know, that's a real touch point for people that feel strongly immigration restrictive, I think is the term you used.
Yeah, and there are moderate Republicans that for months have sort of been working behind the scenes, and this is according to reports, we've been working behind the scenes on what this type of legislation would look like. If we decide to grant protections, what are we going to ask for? What's going to be the trade-off? So there are moderate Republicans that amongst themselves are discussing the real possibility of this type of legislation passing and what comes in return.
Mm-hmm.
But as you mentioned, there are factions within the Republican Party itself. And they there are some hardliners like Steve King who don't want any type of this type of production to happen. Again, that amnesty is the forbidden word in the Republican Party. And so that's where the politics of this comes in as far as how successful this legislation can be. Sure, Republicans and Democrats can come to the table and they can work on trade-offs. But then again, it's also where's the Republican Party positioning itself, and will they want to grant protections to a swath of this of the undocumented population?
I mean, the president was saying this morning, I'm sure you saw this as he was getting on a plane to go to Florida, that Ryan and McConnell are on board with this idea of DACA. And Paul Ryan was urging the president not to end DACA, right? So explain where they're at.
Yeah, so that is true. He said that. Now, Ryan and McConnell were not at the dinner last night with the president and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. That is a recent development from this morning that we learned that they would be on board. And it's true also that Ryan has said that he doesn't believe that we should be deporting these undocumented immigrants. But this is something that we've seen in Congress also with healthcare. I mean, they can declare these sort of things where they mention that they don't want this population to be at risk of deportation, et cetera. But it all comes down to what happens in Congress and what will they draft up? And are we only talking about the DACA population, the nearly 800,000 that I've mentioned have benefited from the program?
Right.
Are we talking about the DREAM Act? That might be a larger swath of the population. So all of these questions are ones they have to answer. And even if we learn that McConnell and Ryan are on board, what does that mean in the grand scheme of things? And will it mean some sort of legislation, drafted up legislation that people can agree on?
We'll get a look at the latest news. One of the things I want to talk to Priscilla about on the other side of news is how the Republican position on immigration reform has changed also over the years. I mean, I'm going to read something that George W. Bush once said about the idea of DACA and that autopsy report that was done on the Republican orthodoxy after the 2012 election when President Obama won re-election, spoke specifically to immigration reform. And so we'll ask Priscilla also about how Republicans may or may not be changing views on this. And I'm interested in hearing from you about whether your opinion has evolved when it comes to immigration reform and specifically the Dreamers. Has it changed over the last decade or so? And is it time for Congress to come back, get to work on comprehensive immigration reform? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, at Kerry, K-E-R-R-I, M-P-R. Back in just a minute here to Phil Picardi now with the latest news. And what are you leading with, Phil?
Well, hi, Kerry. As you've been discussing, President Trump says he's fairly close to reaching a deal with congressional leaders on providing protections to young immigrants who were brought to the U.S. illegally as children. But he says he needs massive border security as well. Trump spoke this morning after denying assertions by Democratic leaders in Congress that they had reached an agreement on the DACA program. President Trump is in Florida today surveying damage from Hurricane Irma. On the way to his plane this morning, the president told reporters power is being turned on rapidly, and the state's leaders and emergency responders are doing an amazing job. Meanwhile, Florida's governor is ordering checks of all the state's nursing homes after several people died in a Hollywood nursing home following the storm. New details about a string of mysterious health attacks on U.S. diplomats in Cuba indicate the incidents were narrowly confined within specific rooms or parts of rooms. Some victims suffered mild brain trauma and now have problems with concentration or recalling words. Baffled investigators have found neither a culprit nor a device and say the facts and the physics are just not adding up. Militants have attacked a checkpoint and nearby restaurant in southern Iraq, killing at least 45 people and wounding 83 others. That's according to a provincial governor who says most of the dead are believed to be Iranian pilgrims who were inside the restaurant. And NASA's Cassini spacecraft has only a few hours left in its more than a decade-long mission. Cassini has been circling Saturn and its moons and making all kinds of new discoveries. Tomorrow, Cassini, which is running low on fuel, will be sent crashing into Saturn. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 9:36.
I'm Tom Weber. Coming up at 11 on NPR News, we'll have a live update from the funeral for Wayzata police officer Bill Matthews. And then our conversations continue in a series on healthcare and health insurance. You'll hear from the conservative think tank Heritage Foundation, which first offered the idea of the individual mandate back in the 90s. That mandate is now law. Join us at 11.
Our brand new national call-in show on American identity is called Flyover. It happens in this area at 3 p.m. on Sundays. But you'll hear calls and listeners from across the country. Here's what we're talking about on Sunday. Up by the bootstraps. Have we become a culture, a society that believes that if you're rich, you earned it and you deserve it? And what does that mean for people who are not, who are on the other side of the income inequality gap? We're talking about that on Flyover, and I'll meet you right here at 3 o'clock on Sunday.
Programming is supported by Sala Architects. You can experience three of Sala's thoughtfully crafted homes on the Homes by Architects Tour, September 16th and 17th. More at salaarc.com/HBAT.
Programming is supported by Mira Books, publisher of The Orphan's Tale by Pam Genoff. NPR called The Orphan's Tale a tribute to the human spirit that soars in the midst of epic despair. Available wherever books are sold.
Back to our conversation now on DACA, and Priscilla Alvarez with us from The Atlantic, and to the phones here to Suzanne in Roseville. Hey, Suzanne, hi. What's your question about this?
My question is about the path to citizenship that President Obama talked about. And so then specifically, are the kids who were in DACA, are they applying for citizenship? And then in just a larger scale about, you know, illegal immigrants, are they also applying for citizenship? And why is that not working to help?
So Priscilla, that so-called path to citizenship that we hear about, how's it apply to DACA?
So most of the DACA recipients came into the country illegally, and so they, by doing so, are not eligible to apply for citizenship. The way it works, which is what I mentioned earlier, is that in order to apply, you need a qualifying petitioner. You need someone who is a U.S. citizen. It could be a relative. You also, or a employer. But even if you have a qualifying petitioner, the one thing that keeps you from applying is that you came into the country illegally. So you cannot, therefore, apply for citizenship. There are exceptions. If you left the country and then entered legally, then you would be able to. But because DACA recipients came to the U.S. illegally as children, they cannot apply for citizenship. Their only recourse here would be a legislative solution.
Priscilla, in reading back over some of the things that George W. Bush said, who, when he was elected, thought he was going to be able to get immigration reform. This is an issue that he was really interested in, of course, as a former governor of Texas. And he failed at it, and a lot of presidents have failed at it. But this is something that President Bush said on the idea of DACA. Family values don't stop at the Rio Grande, and a hungry mother is going to try to feed her child. What is it that stopped President Bush and other presidents from getting the kind of thing that it sounds like President Trump thinks he can make happen here when it comes to comprehensive immigration reform?
Immigration has been a contentious issue for years in Congress, between Congress and the administration. You're right. We saw attempts at comprehensive immigration reform under Bush. We saw the same happen in 2013 under Obama. But the politics of this can get very complicated. And so there tends to be competing demands as to what reform should look like, whether that be from corporations or whether that be from the labor movement, as was the case under Clinton. So all of these competing demands, all of the politics around this issue can make it very difficult to pass immigration reform. Now, the Republican Party has evolved over time, and as has the Democratic Party to some extent, on the issue of immigration. I talked to an immigration professor about this, and he mentioned that 9/11 was really a turning point for immigration, immigration among Republicans and the way they thought about it, seeing it not only as an economic issue but also as a national security issue. I think that over time, what's also happened is that Republican Party has sort of problematized immigration as a whole. So not only looking illegal immigration, but also looking at legal immigration. So there's certainly been an evolution in the position that these parties have taken.
I understand the connection to Homeland Security, but most of the people that this immigration, some kind of reform would address are not the people that were involved in flying planes into towers and some of the other things that were going on in 9/11 and the years after.
You're correct. And I think another part of this, however, is thinking about voters. I mean, these members of Congress have constituencies, and the presidential candidates, presidents are also thinking about their voters. And I think immigration tends to be pegged as one big issue, and immigrants aren't usually divided from their origin country. They're seen as immigrants as a whole. Mm-hmm. And so I think that also plays a role in the way that we think about immigration in this country and who is allowed in and who's allowed out.
Call here from John in El Paso, Texas. Hey, John, what are you thinking about today morning?
How are you? Well, El Paso and Juarez are almost inextricably linked, two of the larger communities on the border with Mexico. Mm-hmm. I'm a 60-year-old man who is employed hundreds of people, many of them from Mexico, many of them undocumented, and quite a few who are DACA representatives or DACA people. And they have all been, without exception, wonderful. I've never had a bad experience with any of them. They're hardworking people. They contribute to society. And the immigration debate in this country has become so politicized. And you have people like Steve King making these horrid remarks. There's no opprobrium heaped on people like him, but it is filtered into the main stream conversation. It's poisoned the atmosphere. Another thing I wanted to say is that facts don't seem to matter. You talk about this border wall and how we need to have security on the border. We have had less people coming in from Mexico in the last 2 or 3 years than we have had in our history.
It's actually in the last 10 years the stream has been diminishing. I'm glad you mentioned it, John. Can I ask you a question as an employer? E-Verify gets into this debate all the time, and
yes,
there are people that say
right. It
doesn't work. Do you use it?
Well, I will tell you that we do a lot of work for the federal government. We are a federal industrial contractor, and all of our employees have to be vetted by different arms of the federal government. I have never had one of these people turned down.
Really?
Never.
So they're going through a security check from the federal government,
yes,
but they don't have documentation.
That is correct.
That's
they work at the military bases. They work at the military hospital. They work at the VA clinic. And one of your other people who called in was also commenting about the facts of so many Filipino nurses being imported to this country when we have this wonderful, readily available, well-trained and loyal group of people that mm-hmm. we could turn to that are still living in the shadows. I think it's a shame. It's shameful and disgraceful.
Good to have your call, John. Let me hear from Matthew in Plymouth. Hey, Matthew, how are you thinking about this?
Well, first off, I'd like to express my condolences to the Matthews family. But I'm from an immigrant family. I'm the third generation, born in this country. My grandparents came in. My grandfather came in through Ellis Island, and my grandmother came from Canada. We did it the right way just because that's the way it was done, and that's the way it should be done.
Mm-hmm.
I sympathize with the children that have been here, brought here illegally by their parents. But where are you going to let the letter of law break down for what group of people? Where are you going to draw your line in the sand?
So Matthew, good to have the call. Priscilla, I actually think we've heard two people who are pretty well informed on this, and we've got a sense of the spectrum of the debate that's ahead of us on immigration reform. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think that also something that the previous caller mentioned about this group coming in illegally and then giving them protections, et cetera, also raises the question, you know, does that mean that you're encouraging illegal immigrants to come into the country? Are you encouraging them to come and receive protections? Which I've heard that argument on the right. And so these are all the complexities that come with this type of legislation, with immigration legislation. It's something that the U.S. has always struggled with. It's about how are you compassionate toward immigrants as a nation built on immigrants,
mm-hmm.
but also how do you reconcile that with policy that is both strict but understanding, right? So that is how this becomes a very contentious issue, and is going to be why the next few months are going to be incredibly interesting to see how Congress delves in this yet again and whether they can come out successful.
I think it's interesting to go back and read that assessment from 2012, commonly called the autopsy on the Republican Party. And here's what it said about immigration policy. If Hispanic Americans perceive that a GOP nominee or candidate does not want them in the United States, i.e. self-deportation, which is what Mitt Romney talked about, they will not pay attention to our next sentence. It doesn't matter what we say about education, jobs, or the economy. If Hispanics think we do not want them here, they will close their ears to our policies. Well, of course, that didn't apply to President Trump. How does it sound to you in the kind of political landscape that we're in now?
So it's to an extent, it sort of harkens back to the 90s, the mid 90s, when under the Clinton administration, there was also a recognition of the fact that there was a growing Latino vote, there was a growing Asian vote, and that these votes would support the Democratic Party or could support the Democratic Party. And also in another immigration debate where you had immigrant advocates sort of raising alarm over some of the policies that were being introduced. Now, you know, I think another part of this is the voter turnout. And that's something else that we saw in the election is that, yes, the next generation of Americans is going to be far more diverse. These are votes that both parties are looking for, but it also comes down to who's turning out to the polls. And as was the case with President Trump, is he still won despite his stance on immigration.
Call here from Paul, listening in Plymouth. Paul, a question about work permits versus citizenship. What is it?
Right, exactly. The discussion about DACA and the whole discussion about illegal immigration, it seems to me that you can have people come into this country without them becoming citizens, or the people that are here already, if they can get work permits, give them a visa or whatever you need, as long as they can get jobs.
Yeah.
Let them stay here or let them come in. And the same thing with students. If they're going to school or as long as they're legitimately going to school, give them something like a visa, something like that. And as long as they're here, make them legal.
So, Priscilla, I think this is an interesting question because one of the things President Bush wanted to do was expand the guest worker program. Now, that's really not going to apply to a lot of the people who are getting higher education and want to stay. But what do you think about the question Tom's asking?
So I think that was the whole idea with DACA. The whole idea was that you could shield some of the segment of the undocumented population from deportation and allow them to work in the country legally. But there's still, and is true with other visas, there's still the renewal process. So until they have a permanent status, you're still having them renew. And that would have continued to be the case with DACA. But President Trump decided to end DACA, in which case this segment of the population specifically won't have that option to continue to find work permits. I hate to sound repetitive, but it always comes down to whether Congress will have a solution for these folks, particularly because it gets very complicated once you came into the country illegally to qualify for any sort of status.
Carolyn called to say, for people worried about encouraging children being born here, can't we just set a date and say people born after that date won't be allowed to become citizens? Sounds rather tidy, much more complicated, I think.
Yes, I think the other that always comes down to, I think, too, the compassion part of this is, And I think it's also been in the debate. I think what she's alluding to here is the anchor baby debate that we heard a lot of in 2016 in the Republican debates. So these are all questions that are just unanswered right now. Immigration reform has been discussed over and over again. These issues have been debated. But particularly in a moment where you will have hundreds of thousands of people eligible for deportation, adding to the undocumented population yet again, what do you do? And what do you do about those that are contributing to the economy? Will we just strip them of that work permit and, go have them back into the shadows? I think that's the conversation that's going on.
President Trump is on the ground now in Fort Myers, Florida, and he's answering some questions. I'm sure you'll get to this, Priscilla, as soon as you get rid of us. He's saying that this is not amnesty. He's being quoted as saying we have to have a wall. But he's also saying that he is open to negotiations and that they are close on a deal with DACA. So, of course, that runs a bit contrary to some of what he was tweeting this morning. It will keep you busy, Priscilla, I'm sure, for the next several weeks. And I'm grateful for your experience and your reporting on this. It helped inform our discussion. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Priscilla Alvarez is assistant editor at The Atlantic and with us this morning to talk about the latest politics and policy of DACA.